right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. One of your co-hosts, Ant Testator, a writer of Names and Flavor Text for Wizards of the Coast and articles at Gathering Magic. With me, as always, interrupting me, as always, is the one and only master of weens, Mr. Mike Linneman.
Snack Time. Okay, I'm here with the snack attack. Today we got a big thing. We got a big thing today.
It's, we have two big things.
Yeah, a really big thing. Some snacks. Okay, so what are our flavor gems of the week? Wait, preview cards.
Boom. That's right. And not only just any preview cards, but Kaladesh.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be really anything else. If we had Commander preview cards, that'd be crazy. Like, well, boom,
You never know. I have to, you know, can't keep expectations going too crazy.
Can you imagine that if all of a sudden we just got one, like, 2 months early? And, like, just wait to see people lose their minds. Anyway, future episode for that.
Yeah, that would actually, that would be really funny if we had one and we didn't say what set it was from and everyone assumed it was Kaladesh. And
the set
came out and the card just was never in it.
We just never show the card. We just show the art. That'd be so trolly. I love it.
Oh, that would be great.
Anyway, flavor gems for this week. We got two. And as you know, that for people watching us at home, Ant is the writer guy. He enjoys the names, the flavor text, the interaction between those, narrative design, if you will. And I'm the art guy. I literally care about that box, 2 inches by 3 inches. I don't really care about the rest. So we balance out. So they give us two preview cards. One is a reprint. Luckily, thank you, Wizards, for that. That is a reprint with new art, which is all my jam. Sometimes there's new flavor text, which is great. And for Ant, it's always some crazy mechanic thing that we get to see brand new, some sort of world-building thing. So,
That's right. Let's
go with mine first.
Okay.
And this was the artwork that was previewed right away when Kaladesh, the mini set, came out. And they scrolled through the images or whatever. And I looked at this and said, those are dwarves. Those are dwarves. Those are dwarves. Those are dwarves. Those proportions are dwarves. I know that's a dwarf. That's a dwarf. That's a dwarf. Like, the woman doesn't have a beard, but that's a dwarf! Right away, and I sent a message back to be like, yeah, you know there's dwarves in this! So immediately, I look on past dwarves to see what they are. And the card is Inspired Charge. It's a reprinted card by our boy, my favorite, Wayne Reynolds, back in M11. 4-drop, instant, creatures you control get +2/+1. It's basically Overrun in white. Sure. And there was a reprint that, you know, Ant enjoys. That's his jam. But in this card, I looked at it right away and I said, oh my god, dwarves are finally back. All that noise that Mark Rosewater was talking about, all the pent-up anguish from people wanting to build a dwarf commander deck are finally coming to fruition. And I was like, oh my god! So right after they post that, literally like 3 hours later, we get our preview cards. And I'm just like, oh, I can't talk about this at all. Someone find this out so I can talk about it.
Right. So luckily, over the weekend, like over the PAX weekend, you know, we got a plethora of dwarves. We got to hear from Ari, who pushed heavily to have dwarves in the set.
Dude loves dwarves.
Yeah. We got Dipala, who's a legendary dwarf pilot.
Amazing.
In all the right colors.
Right.
For dwarves.
Right.
Like, it's just straight up this. If we walk away from Kaladesh knowing anything,
right,
it should be that this is where the dwarves live.
Right. But it's such a weird
Kaladesh
thing.
Kaladesh is for dwarves.
But we're not fighting the tropes, though. Because it's like, well, are dwarves mountain? Or are they, you know, really what white design is? This community of people. And they're kind of stubborn for any change, which is more dwarfy. But they're like, oh, but they're mountain and red. So I'm happy that they're still dancing with that. On this white card, it works here. It's very colorful, which we're not quite used to yet. It's such a bright set. It's so strange. It's like we're going Rise of Eldrazi to Innistrad 1.0 backward, because Rise was all in sunlight, and then Innistrad was all dark. And we were just in dark in Innistrad, and now we're super bright again. Not quite Lisa Frank, but really it's up there.
Like, there's a Frank.
It's like dolphins and like unicorns
and like kitties and stuff. Yeah, like rainbow shooting out of their heads.
Like, someone's gonna be altering Lisa Frank jam. Like, it's
Lisa Frank was like Tumblr before there was Tumblr.
Yeah, I wholly agree. Like, there's this one person that was like, what if Like,
and then, just hear me out for a second.
Like, I want to be in that room when that one designer is like, listen, I want Panda, but it's purple. And they're like, yup, print it, do it. Like, there's no man there. But Inspired Charge, notable because, one, the woman doesn't have a beard. Usually dwarven women have the beards, as Lord of the Rings has established. But here it doesn't. And it's almost more gnome-like, because gnome women don't always have beards, especially with the tinkering. It's kind of a world. Isn't the World of Warcraft the gnome is the, like,
yeah, and while gnomes are very much like the clockwork engineer types.
Right. Like, I never played WoW, but I played the other Warcraft games, because who didn't? Warcraft 2, like LAN parties, mid-90s. I mean, what else are you going to do, right? Rural me, just LAN partying it up. Like, now it's the exact same, except there's, like, meth in rural Minnesota. So it's, you know, it's comical. Either way, you're up all night. I mean, it's a thing. We weren't in it because we were all athletes, but whatever. Inspired Charge, back to it. Notice the dwarves aren't fighting Ant. Why is that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. And honestly, this name perfectly ties into that, being Inspired Charge. Kaladesh is a plane that's all about optimism. Like, yeah. In every color, the central theme is, hey, we're here, we're excited, we're having an industrial revolution, basically, surrounding the discovery of this refined ether. And we're here to show off our intellect, we're here to show off our excitement,
right,
for our inventions. And any type of conflict is not so much a conflict of interests or a conflict as far as, two warring parties. And it's more a competition. So the same way you'd think of a bunch of different athletes being at the Olympics, right? Competing in track and field. They all are ultimately there because they want to win, but they respect each other and they respect the fact that they're all, you know, elite inventors, I guess, if I would want to use your term.
Right, and it's odd. It's almost a make Kaladesh better again. Instead of, like, some sort of, like, mythical nostalgia, everyone is all in for constant improvement. It's a weird, weird plank. So I'm trying to figure out who's the bad guy. Like, I get it that your government is kind of corrupt, whatever, but who's the bad guy? Like, you know, in Pollyanna, it's the lizard coming out of the ground. Like, that makes sense, sure. But here, it's like, what's the external threat? I guess.
I think that's interesting, and I'm thinking that they're doing that very much on purpose, because when we first visited Kaladesh, it was back in Origins.
Sure.
And it was presented to us through the eyes of Chandra. And if you looked at just the cards in Origins, Kaladesh seemed like a very mechanical yet cold place where, you know, they were very structured and they were very against, you know, Chandra and her family. And it created this natural tension where you just saw them as the bad guy. They were the anti-red, right? Against everything that Chandra stood for and ultimately why she left.
Right.
But now that we return, we get to see Kaladesh more from the lens of the other side, not so much through Chandra's eyes. And it seems like this happy, wonderful, bright place, and you can almost kind of forget the fact that these same people were responsible for the death, or what we assume to be the death, of Chandra's parents. Like, we've now learned that her mother survived,
right?
But we're seeing the other side of that, and I think that that's really interesting. And that's, you know, it's very The Wire-esque, where, you know, from one point of view, they're the criminals or the bad guys, they're the whatever, but then from the other point of view, they're just like, no, they're not. You're the criminal, you're the bad guy. So it's kind of more up to us as the viewer to make our own decision and come to our own choice of what side we want to be on.
Interesting concept. And I feel like there isn't all-out warfare against each other either. Like, there's not really a lot of, like, hand-to-hand combat sort of thing yet. Of course, we're going to see more as the second gets unveiled, sure. But it's like, the Inspired Charge is not the dwarves fighting. It's the little machinery. It's the thopters, and you can see them in the background.
Right, exactly.
So you're like, oh, it's more like BattleBots. Okay, I get that. It's because, you know, they're inventors, they're nerds. Yeah. They don't.
If that, I mean, it could very easily be like, I can imagine these two dwarves being on an airship that is akin to a float in the Macy's Day Parade. And they're like, hey, I'm going to inspire the charge of all of our other contraptions to just parade down Main Street through the city fair of Ghirapur to show off everything that we've done and inspire everyone else in the city. And they're literally fighting nothing.
Which is the funny thing. It's like, well, you have duels of originally the entire game was built around a planeswalker fights another planeswalker. But this set says, well, yeah, but really it's the creatures fighting, not you fighting. And you're like, oh, I guess that's true. That makes sense, actually. And it kind of changes that fundamental concept of what the game actually is. Because now you can't become the planeswalker. It's Chandra. I'm not Chandra. She's doing a thing, whatever. Instead, I, as Mike the player, can be someone on Kaladesh, and I'm battling on Kaladesh versus someone else using Kaladeshian weapons and stuff and doctors like the Inspired Judge. And I think that's like a fantastic minor nuance. But it seemed like someone raised their hand and was like, well, aren't they just playing Magic? And you're like, oh, biscuits, yeah.
right.
Totally. So,
at the end of the day, that's what we're doing.
Well, yeah, but we never really quantify that. Like, when you summon something, is it the actual creature coming or a copy or a manifestation? That sort of real-life explanation of play, we never really get into. At least not anymore. And I love that this kind of nod and wink does that out of literally one card. And you're like, ah, sweet. On that note,
I also like just one more thing about your card that you touched on is just the sheer fact that these dwarves, so far as I've seen, they don't really touch on any of the major tropes that we're familiar with from like Lord of the Rings or World of Warcraft, where it's a bunch of bearded Scottish people running around drinking beer and throwing axes at each other's heads.
Right.
Like, And I'm so happy to see that, because I think one of the things that Magic's creative does extremely well is taking a known entity like dwarves and totally making it their own. So when I look at Magic's dwarves now, especially from Kaladesh, I totally can see them as being this group of individuals who really work together, and they have this incredibly strong work ethic, where the way that they get inspired and the way that they approach everything is that they did their job to the best of their ability. And I think like something that the dwarves would consider would be like, there's a right tool for every job. And like they take pride in figuring out what that tool is. And if it doesn't exist, then they create it. And I think that that's really interesting, yet also very fitting to the dwarf mentality.
And I like the gold everywhere. That's nice too.
And there's gold everywhere.
Yeah, that's nice too. What do you got for us, Antoine?
I have a new card. This card is Etherborn Marauder. It's a creature type Etherborn Rogue. We'll get to that in a minute, right? Flying lifelink, when Etherborn Marauder enters the battlefield, move any number of +1/+1 counters from other permanents you control onto Etherborn Marauder. And it's a 2/2, right? Flavor text says, I don't know what that is or who it belongs to, but it's shiny. And I want it, right?
I dig it.
Yeah. So one of the things that we learned over the weekend in PAX is that there's a new black-aligned race on Kaladesh.
Right.
The Etherborn.
Yeah.
And what they are is they're a race of creatures that are created. They're basically the byproduct of the Aether refinement process. So one of the things that Magic wanted to do with Kaladesh is obviously there's this inspiration from the Industrial Revolution and saying, hey, we have this brand new resource, this brand new energy. How can we best use it? And all these people run around coming up with different inventions and different ways to use this new energy source. What they wanted to avoid was the byproduct of the Industrial Revolution being like smog and clouds of dust and dirt and grime everywhere.
Right.
So I think Ari Levitch put this best when he said, we sat in a room, we tried to come up with, okay, what's the polar opposite of pollution? Which ultimately leads to death.
Okay.
Right? And they were like, well, life, I guess. So the Aetherborn are literally a living pollution, right? They're the byproduct of refinement, but instead of it creating this like cloud of death, it creates life. And what's really fascinating about them as a race is that their lifespan is incredibly short. So their mentality is that they want to live life to the fullest and they want to experience as much of life as possible before they ultimately die.
So they're YOLO.
Yeah, they're YOLO 24/7. That's their mentality.
You only live once, okay.
YOLO 24/7, we're just going to go for it. So knowing that, this flavor text to me seems like it should be attributed to the Aetherborn itself in saying that, like, hey, I've only been around for 2 months. I have no idea what I'm looking at here, but it's shiny. It's awesome. I want it. Let's go. I want to try it out. I want to do this.
Right.
I want to experience whatever you got. And it's very fitting because if you look at what the Aetherborn is wearing, it's wearing this Thopter contraption, this Thopter jetpack that we've seen before on the blue humans of Kaladesh. It's wielding a sword that has this organic wood integrated into the hilt that we've seen being created by elves of the plane. So it's very much speaking to the fact that this creature is just grabbing at literally everything that it possibly can in order to experience as much as it possibly can before it ultimately dissipates back into the ether.
Which is crazy that it's basically like, what is that movie that has everything's legal for like 24 hours?
The Purge.
I mean, that is their life, is it not?
It's similar.
If they're rogues, they're going to be probably thieving. But I think they're more
rogues in a sense that, like, so this guy's a rogue in a sense that he's looking around, he or she or it. I don't even think they have a gender.
I think it's they.
So they are looking around and saying, oh, like, I find this and this to be shiny and interesting and cool, and I'm just going to borrow it. I'm literally only going to be alive for another month. Let me borrow your snowblower. Let me use it, and then I'll be dead, and you can come get it. Come take it back.
So basically, they're like raccoons.
They are basically... sure.
I mean, they're like raccoons. Like, give them a shiny thing.
So it's not so much stealing in a very negative sense where I purposefully am going to reach into Mike's pocket, steal some money, and never intend on them giving it back. It's more... borrowing with the intent of returning once I'm no longer alive.
But what doesn't that create the issue of, are these things super common or are these things super rare? Because if they're super common, that means these things are like fundamental Christians rapturing everywhere and they just disappear in the middle of a street and you're like, all right, we gotta clean up another one and find some pants. You know, like, what? I can't imagine. And then it's like, do people steal their stuff then? Or is there another Aetherborn that's like friends, I guess? For like a minute, they're like...
I mean, that's something that hasn't been touched on yet, and I'm really excited to find out more about them. Aspect and their origin, right? Like, we know that they're the byproduct of the refinement process, but we don't know exactly how they manifest. Like, we don't know if it's Dr. Manhattan style, like maybe one eye at a time, or like a finger shows up somewhere and swipes something, and like we don't know. Or if they're just, you know, dragons of Tarkir, full on just like getting fully formed, just popping out of ether tubes. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Can people understand them? Do they listen to Kesha? Because that just makes sense. Like, because you assume they will. Like, they're going to be partying all the time. And they even mentioned on the panel that they're like, yeah, people can't really keep up with them because they're just...
They don't stop.
Well, they're almost hedonists.
Right. Because... And then, like, do they need to eat? Do they need to stop to eat? We don't know. Like, it seems like they're very appreciative of the arts. And they're very, from the imagery that we've seen, it seems like they're like romantics. Like, they're totally embracing every aspect of life that they can actually consume.
Which is great that it's art, because those are like, people talk about music. It's whenever you can't express the unexpressible, you can through music. you know, because you can have the emotion that you can't describe, you can't write. But then there's all the different types of art, from, you know, poetry to music to ballet, that are literally awe-inspiring. And I really, really like that, that they chose black to do that and not red.
Right. Absolutely. And, like, some people, I've seen some people on Twitter saying, like, oh, you know, I don't know if they fit black, or I don't know if they really fit as being a rogue. It doesn't really feel roguish to me. And, like, this is a game where there's a rogue card where I can throw a fish at somebody. So I feel like the bounds of what constitutes as being roguish or roguelike is pretty wide.
Well, throwing the fish is arguably the painting I should have bought, and I'm quite angry I didn't. Because I thought, I'm like, oh, that's dumb. We're going to get more of those. And we haven't gotten anything as good as fish throw in years. Like, Noggin Whack
is
such a good card.
It's literally a trout tied to a brick.
It's so good, though. It's so good. It's astonishingly good. So for us to look at these two cards, I mean, really give us a good look into the plane. We get to see not only one of the dwarves and kind of what they're working on, but also Etherborn, that they are almost solitary. That it's not a community because they don't live long enough to do that.
Yeah, that's something. That's the other thing I wanted to bring up too, is that it's very interesting to me that so far, I don't think we've seen an image of an Etherborn where there's more than one.
No, we have not.
In
we have
the
not
image, it's always just an Etherborn alone.
So I do think they're more rare. I don't think they're popping
right
up everywhere.
I would think so too. I think they just kind of pop up. They just suck in as much stimuli as they can, and then they poof, they're gone.
It's almost like a famous person in a small town. Like, people kind of follow them around because they just do interesting things or something unexpected, which I totally get. We do have the full art below. We talked to Kieran about it. And we do get to see some of the architecture, which is cool. I don't quite know how to talk about it yet, because it's not quite Indian.
The architecture in the background?
Yeah, behind it. I mean, it's not Indian. It's not necessarily Islamic as like a mosque would look. It's almost a fusion between like Persian mosques, which are very
Kaladeshian.
Yeah, it's called Kaladeshian.
That's what the architecture is.
But everyone wants to know where to think it based from. People do. Like, Sultai. Yeah. Oh, it's Cambodian. And people are like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I totally get it. This is, if you look at Persian mosques, Persian, very, very, very specific, because they're colorful and all of their lights, all their windows have colored glass. So when you stand in the middle, it's kaleidoscope. It's so, so colorful.
Interesting.
Like, it's almost like the rose windows, you know, in big Gothic churches, the big circle.
Right,
except
right.
All the windows are like that. Except there's just not that many of them. And they're in Iran, which not a lot of people go to, mixed with some of the motifs of India, like the domes, except they're not, like, different colors or green.
Yeah. I don't know if maybe the thought process there was just, like, what you just described to me sounds like a very interesting, very colorful, very engaging style of architecture, right?
Sure, right.
Very bright, very, very inspiring. The clothing on this plane is arguably very Indian in inspiration, right?
I would agree to that. That's at least as a basis.
As a basis, okay. Which, again, like, there's a lot of color, there's a lot of detail, a lot of patterns. I feel like just Kaladesh as a whole is driven by the idea that literally everything is just infused with color, infused with just bright enjoyment. Like, you're supposed to look at it and feel inspired. That's the takeaway, is you just want to create something where I'm going to pause whatever I'm doing. I'm going to look at it and go, wow, that I want to be as like creative enough to create something that will also make someone else stop and look and take time out of their extremely busy day to just appreciate, you know, the detail and the work that went into it.
It's almost some of the opulence of it. It's this, like, it's supposed to stun you with, you know, just color and reference. And that's kind of what, like, old-timey medieval churches were. Everything was gray in their life. Their houses were brown. They had mud floors, like, whether it was Europe or anywhere in the medieval times, but their churches and their religious places were super bright. You walked in and you just stared at things. Like, there was no marble statues. Those were all painted back in the day. And I feel some of that here without having religious overtones to being like, oh, we have this God that we all worship. Instead, it's like everywhere you go, it's you're supposed to feel this, as you said, a spiritual lift. Like, and then maybe that's the Inventor's Fair just kind of flowing through everything, that there are no straight lines in this plane, like, at all. Everything's curved. Everything right. is. And that's the either refinement thing.
Right. That's the effect of the either. Right. Just being a not only a source of inspiration, but also feeding the natural shapes of the plane, like the clouds themselves spiral, the plants and the animals and literally everything that inhabits this plane is infused with or affected by the ether sphere.
Which feels like Esper, but it's not.
It's similar, yeah. It's almost kind of like a like if Esper was modeled after Kaladesh, like Kaladesh is the naturally occurring version of sure. whatever Esper is. Like, I feel like somebody, it's almost as if somebody came to Kaladesh, they're like, wow, this place rocks. And then they went back to Alara or the Shard of Esper and they're like, I'm going to try to make what I just saw. And so Esper has this very artificially generated vibe to it, whereas Kaladesh feels much more natural, much more in tune with, you know, the surroundings.
Well, couldn't Mirrodin be said the same thing? Couldn't Karn have said, I want to make a perfect world. I want it to be everything I wanted in artifacts instead.
Well, that was right. That was basically Karn's original goal was, yeah. I want to create a plane that is mathematically perfect.
Yeah, and then he left.
And then he left, and the oil that was left behind was kind of like, yeah, I'm going to F all that up.
Yeah, no.
I have a different idea.
Like, yeah, when you leave your friend in charge, you know, your friend is kind of irresponsible.
Yeah, and your friend's a little eccentric, and he's like, I'm going to have a house party, and I'm going to portal like all these different races in. It's going to be a great time.
He invited way too many people to the party. I mean, way too many people.
And then all those people had kids. They were there way too long. They overstayed their welcome. And then when he asked them all to go and they didn't want to leave, and then he had to forcibly make them leave, but then he couldn't make their kids leave because technically their kids were born there, so they like live there now.
It's not good.
It was crazy.
It's not good. You never bring friends of friends to parties. That's when bad things happen. That's all it do. But love the two previews. Super fun. Both super flavorful. Big thanks to the Wizards PR team for hooking us up and the community folk. Really appreciate that. Our episode, we got to stay under 30. You know how it do. And we got to thank patrons first. Real talk. Yep. Huge, huge help for all of this. I mean, we're sounding better and better. We do have a designer coming up, and we are going to have a little bit of a downtime with Ant going out.
Yeah, I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks.
Like 100 weeks.
Yeah, so like the week before my wedding, I'm out. And then I'm going to be on my honeymoon for 2 weeks.
So I'm going to bring
a little hiatus there where I'm going to be MIA.
I'm going to have like 30 guests. But really, I mean, I think there's some people that I think would be great for me to grab because it's timing. We just got to get them on. And we also have another Wizards designer that would love to be on. And that'll be coming super soon. But patrons, thanks for helping us with that. Our sound is better. And we're getting better with it. One of these days, I'll convince Ant to stop using Skype cripes as I fight with it every week. But Ant, where can they find you?
So everyone can find me on Twitter. It's the easiest way to get a hold of me. Or go to antestor.com as links to pretty much everything.
All right. To get a hold of us, it's obviously at SnackTimeCast on Twitter. Or it's SnackTimeThePodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can get a hold of me. I'm at VorthosMike on Twitter. You can Google me or attempt to spell my last name in Linneman. It rhymes with cinnamon.
Four ends.
Because I'm all about that flavor. But other than that, thanks for watching today, and we'll be back again soon.